KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond, California.
San Jose.
I'm from the Campbell area.
Hayward.
Coming up, investigators are determining the extent of devastation from fires in Northern and Southern California. Meanwhile, neighborhoods in Santa Rosa are rebuilding from last year's destruction.
I really want to see this come back together.
Then we'll introduce a new opinion segment, Bay Views, with an essay about an art gallery forced out of the space it occupied for almost half a century.
The Galleria de la Raza isn't just another art gallery. That's like referring to Gabriel Garcia Marquez as just another writer.
And a story about preserving memories when family comes together.
There are three stages in life. There's youth, there's middle age, and there's you look great.
Cross Currents is next. The Camp Fire in Northern California is by far the deadliest and most destructive fire in state history. While the victims deal with the immediate aftermath of disaster, people affected by last year's wine country fires are in the middle of a long rebuilding process. It's a cycle that some people think we'll need to get used to in this increasingly fire-prone state. But one silver lining? Starting over means an opportunity to build differently with the environment and climate change in mind. KALW's energy and environment reporter Angela Johnston has more.
One of the things Gina Jacob remembers from the night of the fires is the sound of her wife's bare feet running down the street as she tried to wake their neighbors up.
I could just hear her feet hitting the pavement so hard, banging on doors, windows, trying to alert people because everybody was asleep.
The next morning, their Larkfield Estates subdivision was completely erased by the fire. More than a year later, though, the neighborhood sounds like this. Jacob's neighbors are in all stages of home reconstruction. Her family knew it would be expensive, but they decided they wanted to stay here in the neighborhood almost immediately. This was their home.
I love my neighborhood, and it draws me here, and I also feel like it gives me an opportunity to be a part of rebuilding a neighborhood instead of walking. I really want to see this come back together.
So the day after the fire started, Jacob contacted an architect and a builder. But almost a year later, she hasn't started building yet. I meet her on the dirt plot of land where her old house used to stand, where she lived with her family for almost 20 years.
You walked up here, and here you can see the remaining of the building pad. So we had two bedrooms in the front, and then the living room was here to the left, and then as you went through the foyer area.
They had problems with their insurance, and like a lot of fire victims, that slowed them down. On top of that, supplies like concrete are in high demand and expensive.
Getting to put a foundation in, it takes, you know, a lot just to get to that point.
Another challenge, sewage. Larkfield Estates is an old subdivision built in the 60s. Before the fire, every home was on a septic system, not connected to Santa Rosa's central sewer system like the rest of the city. Septic systems are like mini wastewater treatment plants underneath each home.
And then it's going into your ground, basically seeping into the ground.
They can be incredibly efficient when they're well maintained, but these are old and many don't meet the current county standards. If they break, they can contaminate groundwater, something that's extremely precious in drought years. Even before she lost her home, Jacobs was worried about her system.
I felt like I was already on borrowed time with my septic system. You know, they may not be meant for 100 years or, you know, maybe not even past 30 years, and I'm now approaching 45 and up to 50 years.
So when the Sonoma County Water Agency came to her and the rest of her subdivision with the idea of connecting the entire neighborhood to the main sewer line, she thought it could be a good opportunity. Then she heard the price.
They said it's going to cost, you know, $57,000 and more.
Per home?
Per home, per homeowner. And that was just like, whoo!
They complained, and the water agency shaved off a couple thousand dollars. But the entire neighborhood, all 140 homes, had to buy in. It was all or nothing.
It started, you know, creating friction, of course. And that's what I didn't want to happen with our neighborhood.
On top of all the rebuilding costs and insurance shortfalls, any extra time and expense could be prohibitive. So the water agency came back with another plan, $45,000 with a low interest rate loan. And if you wanted to keep your old septic system, you could.
This opportunity isn't cheap, but it allows us as homeowners to choose sustainability for our rebuild.
More than half of the 140 homes in Larkfield Estates are choosing to connect to the sewer line. But it's not just about water. Rachel Kuykendall thinks big changes can be made if Santa Rosa rebuilds with cleaner energy options, like electric versus gas.
Right when the fires hit, it was actually very interesting because we're a bit unique as a utility.
She works for Sonoma Clean Power, a local PG&E alternative. They found that if you build a house completely electric, it's the equivalent of taking 3 cars a year off the road.
Unlike an investor-owned utility, we're not-for-profit, and really our mission is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So that was really a moment for us to step back and say, how can we help our community rebuild, and how can we help them rebuild better?
Their answer was providing money for people who decide to rebuild their homes with clean power. One person who considered taking them up on the offer is Barry Hirsch. He lives up the road from Gina Jacob and knew his home was destroyed when a friend texted him a picture the day after his family evacuated.
I wouldn't have known it was my place. There was nothing. You know, there was nothing. It was all gone.
Hirsch is a retired contractor and knew he needed to get the ball rolling right away.
I mean, I've built houses my whole life, and I was just prepared to go, like, you know, we had propane up here before, and I had a gas water heater, gas cooktop, all that kind of stuff, and that's what I was going to do.
But then he heard a Sonoma Clean Power talk about energy-efficient homes.
And I thought, that sounds cool. So I started investigating it more, and so I got really into it, and I said, man, if I'm going to build a house, why should I just build an old crappy house? My house was nice, but...
One thing led to another, and soon Hirsch was buying an electric hot water heater and drawing plans for rooftop solar, building an 100% electric home.
There we go.
When I meet Hirsch at his place, contractors are putting the final touches in the kitchen before he gets ready to move back in, installing an electric stove, just in time for Thanksgiving. Some of Hirsch's neighbors are also installing solar and other energy-efficient appliances, but it's been difficult to get others on board.
It just kind of slows the process, and people are in a rush to get a house built. So that complication of doing that stuff does not make the program desirable for everyone.
Rachel Kuykendall is dealing with the same issues at Sonoma Clean Power. How can they help get people in greener homes faster, and how can they do it without turning people away altogether? They're offering almost $18,000 in incentives for specific items like electric car chargers, extra insulation to keep a house warm, and solar panels. But this is still out of reach for a lot of people. So far, only a couple hundred have signed up.
Some people will look at Sonoma County and say, oh, everyone's really rich. They don't need this. But what they don't realize is we lost a lot of low-income homes, and it hit a lot of folks who just financially can't do this.
And it's not just homeowners who lost their places to live. It's also renters. Kuykendall says they're looking at ways to work around this, like collaborating with an affordable housing developer and a mobile home park to see if they can rebuild a low-income multifamily building 100% electric. In Larkfield Estates, Gina Jacob points out empty lots, some of her neighbors that couldn't afford to stay.
You have a lot of elderly people that lived in this neighborhood, senior citizens, and why would they want to add a mortgage? You know, to rebuild when their house was paid off.
As we walk out of where her driveway would have been, we almost trip over a pumpkin plant popping out of the dirt and debris.
What's this right here?
We plant pumpkins every year, and they were usually planted back there. And I guess with the debris cleanup and then moving everything around, it just reseeded itself.
Seems like it's kind of a good metaphor for the whole.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just an example how something can be just totally taken out by a fire, but yet life can return.
In Santa Rosa, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
Angela is KLW's energy and environment reporter. If you've got a tip for her, reach her at environment@klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Well, Cross Currents turned 10 this year, and we think that's the perfect time to try some new things. So over the next few months, we may change up our sound a bit, add some new voices here and features there, and just freshen things up a little. Let's get started. Today, we're introducing a new semi-regular segment called Bay Views. It's a chance for you, people in our community of listeners and makers, to share your thoughts about our changing city and region. We'll begin with poet Josiah Luis Alderete and the tenuous future of one of his favorite Bay Area institutions, the Galleria de la Raza in San Francisco's Mission District.
What is the view of our city turning into? Our once humble skyline of Coit Tower and the Transamerica Pyramid is now shadowed by the ginormous presence of the Salesforce Tower of Mordor. While way down here, little Rolobots cruise up and down Market Street delivering sandwiches and Bobo tea drinks to office tech workers. The future is here, and so many of our fellow citizens are really looking the part with their Mark Zuckerberg-inspired uniforms and hovercraft scooters buzzing up and down and all around. Our neighborhoods are rapidly and rabidly changing. They're transforming so quickly you can't recall what was in the storefront on your block before the reclaimed wood pour-over coffee spot opened. And it's no exaggeration that of all of San Francisco's neighborhoods, the residents of the Mission have been most affected by the so-called progress that is transforming San Francisco. And now comes the latest and perhaps most devastating change to the neighborhood. It was announced a few weeks ago that the Galleria de la Raza is being evicted by its landlord from the space it has occupied on the corner of 24th and Bryant for nearly 47 years. What is the view of our city turning into? I am a Chicano poet, a first-generation immigrante who was lucky enough to be raised here in the Bay Area. And as any lifetime resident can tell you, we've all seen a whole lot of places disappear. Places that we still use to describe our city, even though they're gone. Places like jazz clubs in the Fillmore, the Doggy Diner, Esta Noche, the John Coltrane Church on Divisadero, and so many more. They form an indelible part of the city's personality and what people think of when they think of San Francisco. But they are no more. What is the view of our city turning into? Some say, if the Galleria de la Raza disappears, so what? We got art in the streets. We got art galleries in every neighborhood, from the Tenderloin to Pacific Heights. And even as we speak, the Latino Art Museum is being built right now in the art center part of town. So what's the problem if one art gallery closes? Well, the Galleria de la Raza isn't just another art gallery. That's like referring to Gabriel Garcia Marquez as just another writer. For those that don't know, the Galleria de la Raza is a spot that has represented and celebrated Latino and Latina culture for 5 decades. From the Chicano movimientos of the 70s to the Latinx LGBTQ solidarity movements happening right now. It's often hard to fathom in this day and age where everyone is inclusive and multiculturally aware how truly revolutionary and amazing the opening of this gallery was at the time. It was one of the first gallery spaces in San Francisco where artists of color's voices and perspectives could be seen and heard. It was this tiny galleria, and not the SF MoMA, that first introduced Bay Areans to a Mexican painter named Frida Kahlo. And it has created events that people have come to associate with San Francisco's cultural identity, like El Día de los Muertos celebration and procession. And the Galería is where I first heard the voices of other poets of color and where I really connected with my own voice. It was at the Lunada, the beloved monthly reading series that's been held at the Galería on every full moon for the past 8 years. The Lunada is unlike any open mic you've ever attended. They're raucous, loving eventos that draw veterano poets, Chicano rappers, Puerto Rican musicians, ranchera singers, and people who have never read their work to a live audience before. These gatherings are truly eclectic, electric evenings that showcase the true depth and diversity of the artists and cultures that make up the mission. At the Lunada, you not only heard the artist, but you saw the people that really gave life and flavor to this neighborhood. They held what may be the final Lunada last month. There, amid the giant tortilla sculptures with home engraved into them over and over, the poets read their poems for the last time in that space. The ranchera singer sang a Chavela Vargas song, and we all promised that this place would not disappear. No matter what happened, the Lunada and the Galería would continue in some way or another.
Este amor apasionado anda todo alborotado.
And in this day and age, when hate and suspicion against immigrantes is on the rise, Galería de la Raza is a sanctuary gallery where undocumented artists feel safe enough to speak up. What is the view of our city turning into? Over the years, I've often heard artists from the mission refer to 24th Street as El Pueblo, the village. By extension, the Plaza of El Pueblo is undoubtedly the Galería. The plaza in Latin American culture is the spot in every village where you go to hear the latest news. It's the spot in town where you go just to kick it for a few momentos and see the colores and hear the sounds of your cultura. It's a place to see others and a place to see yourself reflected back. I say the Galería de la Raza is the mission's plaza. And I ask, what is the view of our city turning into? And what is a pueblo without a plaza?
Nos dejamos hace tiempo, pero se llegó el momento de perder. Tú tenías.
That was a Bay View from poet and Bay Area native Josiah Luis Alderete. You can hear his poem about the Galería at KELW.org. And if you've got a Bay View you'd like to share on the air, well, we want to hear about it. We're looking for essays that offer a personal take on life in the Bay Area and the issues affecting our region. Send your personal essay ideas to bayviews@KELW.org and make sure to include your name and your phone number.
Llegaré hasta donde estés, yo sé perder, quiero volver, volver, volver.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Thanksgiving week makes us feel things, a lot of things, about history, family, memory. Last year, Bay Area reporter Margaret Catcher brought a recorder to her holiday table, but when she turned it on, she found herself wondering about her impulse to document the moment.
Last year, I wanted to document my family and our Thanksgiving together to preserve our holiday like spice jam. Thanksgiving has always been particularly special for my family. We're scattered across the country, but we've prioritized coming together in New York for as long as I can remember.
They should, exactly. I think they should outlaw all that and go back to the yeah.
We celebrate at Leslie's house. She's my dad's oldest daughter, my half-sister. My family is packed into her New York City apartment, pouring wine down our throats and yelling over each other about the superior quality of the olive spread. Leslie's tried to institute a no-entering-the-kitchen rule for her own sanity. But in I go with my microphone.
15 years ago? I don't remember.
This is the first year my turkey came out moist.
Excuse me, I have to get back to my job. I'm operating.
That was Leslie bragging about her turkey, which my mother Jane, a retired physician, was chiseling at with an electric knife.
I resent being called grandpa, and I am the sous chef, which means if people get sick, they sue me.
Well, the shark bites with his teeth, dear.
The sous chef is my dad, Gerald, age 92. The crooner is Evan, Leslie's husband. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer about 5 years ago. With the two of them facing two different specters, I've got mortality on the brain.
Someone said to me, there are three stages in life. There's youth, there's middle age, and there's, you look great. Another way of saying, yes, you're still here.
He's always had a dark sense of Jewish dad humor, but his jokes speak bright truths.
The truth is that I'm more appreciative of the fact that we're all together and can communicate and understand each other and think reasonably clearly each year.
I communicated with and understood the youngest in the room, too. This was also the first year that my sisters have both brought their babies, the new generation, to the table. What is your name?
Ellie.
What holiday is it?
Thanksgiving.
Can you say happy Thanksgiving?
I have lemon.
Bloop.
Bloop.
Babies love being recorded, unlike some people.
So you can remove the microphone from my face.
I'm obsessive about embalming the present, maybe in hopes that preserved memories will have future magical powers, powers to restore. I'm not alone.
Like, I will save all of the voicemails that I have from you. Aww. And I do.
That's Evan's daughter, Paige. She started this secret habit after her dad's cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, no, one of my friends who's... her dad died, and something she told me when I first told her that you were sick was that I should save all of your voicemails. I don't save voicemails from anyone else, but if it's like your voicemails are always like, "Hey boo boo, just calling," like you say the same thing every time. So if it's like a good representation of that, I keep it.
That's really a memorable message, isn't it? That's very powerful. Hey boo boo.
Hey boo boo.
My nose. Is that funny? You think it's funny? It hit my nose.
I think mortality focuses your mind on a lot of things that it does pass in a flash.
As we all get older and have greater experience, we have more perspective. Just have more time and more space to kind of observe Thanksgiving for what it is and means to us.
We stay in New York together for the weekend and spend hours in Central Park. At the zoo, my dad sits and watches the family with me.
They look like giant bunnies.
Giant bunny.
If you make a funny face, Gerald, I'll really, really be angry.
Angrier.
Yeah, Lily, it's llama, llama, red pajama.
No one's telling the llama to stand up straight. They just love the llama. Make me a llama.
I know at some point I'll have to stop preserving this Thanksgiving with this group and start enjoying it in its canned form.
In 5 years, can you describe what you think Thanksgiving will be like?
Well, we'll definitely have to rent more hospital rooms so everybody can be with me at the facility. So 5 years from now, it's an eternity. But wouldn't it be nice if we were all here 5 years from now? I'll settle for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's all be around 5 years from now. Complaining.
In Oakland, I'm Margaret Catcher for Cross Currents.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth there, and it shows them pearly white.
Margaret is a student reporter at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. And if you want to hear stories like that whenever you want, subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. Go to klw.org and click Cross Currents. Today's team includes Janae Darden, Joanne DeLuna, Sarah Nora Kost, Lisa Morehouse, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega Welch, Eli Wertschafter, and Aliyah Yates. Gabe Graben, Tariq Foda, and James Rollins engineer the show. Shireen Adil is our content manager. David Boyer is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Sour Windows from Albany. They're playing at the Elbow Room in Oakland tomorrow night. Music starts at 8:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Every time I think a stranger looks like you, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Me.